From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of October, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather. We'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass at NutriNag Solutions in Daggerville. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour here on our home station, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program. If not, you'll hear a portion of it with our panelists, including Ellen Dearden, Naomi Bloom, and Ted Seifert. It's already up on the website, too, at willag.org, or you can search it out by name, Commodity Week, in your favorite podcast applications. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $4.23 1/4. It was down 4 3/4 cents. The March at $4.37, 4 1/4 lower. The May down 3.5 cents. A settlement price at $4.45 3/4 for the May corn. November soybeans 3 lower, $10.41 3/4. The settlement price January at $10.16 1/4 down a penny and 3/4. And the March at $10.73 1/2 down 1 3/4 cents. Soft red winter wheat 4 cents or 0.5 cent. Lower. In the December contract, the hard red up a penny and a half. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract down $7.25 at $233.92 1/2. Feeder cattle were down $9.25 for 100 pounds at $348.17 1/2. Lean hogs 12.5 cents higher at $81.90. Mike Zuzulo, globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take up the marketplace on this Friday. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us again today. We appreciate that. How are things in your part of the world?
Yeah, quite a few clients calling in on obviously the cattle markets and how to handle those here going into the holidays, especially with the spring calf sales, you know, red hot right now and kind of peaking at this point, adding quite a bit of nervousness and negativity to the sale barns in the last half of this past week. Other thing I continue to hear about, Todd, is the finishing up or close to finishing up of some of the harvest data coming from Northwest Missouri, coming from South Central Illinois, all matching up with what we've been hearing for the most part of harvest. The corn yields down 10 to 20, going to be, say, the person I talked to in Northwest Missouri, likely to be more like 220 as opposed to 240, 250, holding in the soybeans at the mid 70s. South Central Illinois client called Friday morning and said, looking at average on the soybean yields, down about 20 on corn yields, going to be probably top end in the 170s versus the last couple years of breaking through 200. And so I think the spreads, old crop, new crop spreads in corn, and some of the basis that's been tracking higher, especially east of the Mississippi River, picking up on this, I think, pretty nicely.
Let's start with the livestock sector. We'll move back to the grains. I do want to take up both live cattle and feeder cattle off sharply on this Friday. You might have thought that that would have been related to the president's look at importing Argentine beef into the United States. But it was news out of Mexico that their ambassador is planning to ask that the border be opened. And it has to do with screwworm and a whole lot of animals that are south of the border that could come to the U.S. Can you tell me what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think that's a long shot at this point as far as the border opening because of the recent cases. And my understanding is the amount of factories to create enough sterile traps is not there yet. It's probably still a couple months away, and we pretty much need those sterile traps, and those essentially factories have produced these sterile traps to catch and get the bad screwworm flies out of commission. What it does, Todd, is it adds to the idea, and this is, I think, where Trump's policy is probably similar to what he did with the egg crisis. I think he's gotten to a point with some of the people that he works with that have said beef prices are too high, we need to bring them down. And the Truth Social post that he had earlier this week would give me that kind of feeling. the way he worded things, and that his goal now is to use whatever's in his arsenal to bring down beef prices. If I combine that egg policy mindset with 2014 and the idea of hedging because of the seasonals and what happened in October of 2014, it leads me to believe that we're going to need to be playing defense from here on out into the holidays. And the next key support levels that would have to force me into more hedges would be the September lows around 350 in feeder cattle and around 228 in fat cattle. In fact, the 228 levels, both the SEP and the August lows in fat cattle. But I think it's important. The Argentine beef really doesn't do anything as far as materially changing supply-demand fundamentals. Mexico border would. I think what I'm going to be watching very closely now is what he talks to Brazil about and what he talks to Australia about, because he went around, his administration went around and talked to key countries to bring eggs into this country. I'm guessing he's trying to do that with the beef. So if we're going to go down another leg, I'm going to guess it's going to be because that Australia and Brazil are bringing beef in, and that is a sizable quantity. I would also throw out to cattle ranchers right now who are indeed suffering from this price action that it's important to realize that we've just made a new record high in the stock market on Friday. That's a key element going into the holidays. I'm very nervous about Wall Street. And I would also say that the corn market, we've seen very clearly how the feeders have sold feeders and bought corn on the reversal of the spreads. And I think that's where the managed money is right now. So corn keeps going higher past this week's monthly high. That may reinstitute even additional selling pressure in the feeders.
Just a point of clarification, you said 2014, that has to do with what?
Yeah, that has to do with the cattle cycle high back in October of 2014. And I've got about 20 volumes of CRB commodity yearbooks. And when I pulled out the 2015 yearbook that talked about 2014, it read like this year, quite honestly, Todd. So I've been on this tack that I might as well hedge even before all this stuff happened, might as well hedge and play it like 2014 just to be safe going into the holidays.
And that would put it in line with the 8 to 10 year beef cattle cycle, kind of longer, but in that range, I suppose. Now turn your attention to other things you've been watching. What's been on your mind this week?
We've talked a lot about the wheat and the crude oil not playing ball and helping the soybeans and the corn. We got that changed this week because of a policy shift. And the Trump administration going in with Russian sanctions on oil, we saw the crude oil wake up, and that woke up the WTI and SRW together, I think, Todd. And I think that helped us go on higher into the later part of the trading week. We saw a pullback in corn and soybeans on Friday. Here again, I'm wondering if that's not policy related because of the fact that we shut down talks with Canada, and they are a key biofuel player. And I think the market has kind of bought into better demand going into Canada for both biodiesel and ethanol. Now maybe they're thinking not as good or maybe less. So maybe pulling back some of their horns there late in the day Friday. But I think going into next week, it's really important with this move up in soybeans, A, wheat and crude oil continue to support, and B, we better get a meeting. And like I know it's set up between the U.S. and China, but it better happen. And I think the trade at these price levels really expects something from the U.S.-China meeting, that something's going to happen. I'm still calling that a long shot. So I'm preparing clients and subscribers for getting some hedges freshened up next week in beans.
Before we say goodbye, a quick reminder, and I know you know this, Mike, that Canada is the number one export destination for U.S. ethanol exports. Thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check the weather forecast now with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hi, Eric. Thanks much for being with us. Let's start with the rainfall that we have had, maybe some rainfall that we might get, and what things are like here in the Corn Belt.
Well, I mean, Todd, I don't know about you, but last weekend, right, when it started raining on Saturday, my wife and I just sat out on our porch swing and just watched it rain and enjoyed the sound of rain hitting the roof. And it was, you know, what was great about last weekend's rain is it lasted for a long time and it was never intense. So we got this nice, good soaking rain, and Southern Illinois got it better than we did here. And it was fantastic. Now, it's still fall. We have found ourselves back over into a drier pattern. It's not that we don't have rainfall chances coming up. In fact, there might even be chances this weekend. I think the best rains are going to be south of us, but we could get some moisture in. But the reality was is that system kind of came through and threw the brakes on the rapidly developing drought. Now, our soil moisture problems down deep are not cured, right? We still have problems at subsurface levels. And we know that the Mississippi still has not taken in a lot of this moisture that came through, but it was at least reprieve from what had been an incredibly warm and very dry late summer into fall. I mean, if you think about it, Todd, from August 1st until the 18th, last weekend, most of central Illinois saw less than 2 inches of rain over 2.5 months, almost 2.75 months.
I was up early this morning, early enough, in fact, to see temperatures outside were below freezing today. Yeah. Cool weather, actually, the last couple of days, I suppose, going forward for a while, too.
Yeah, we're in that typical fall time period where you get rapidly, you know, fluctuating temperatures. Our daily temperature range could be as high as 30 degrees. So we could even see huge swings each day. But the reality is the jet stream's moving. I mean, Todd, I was watching a flight that left, I forget what airport in Japan, but was heading toward Dallas this morning. It had a 190-mile-an-hour tailwind in the jet stream over the Pacific. Its ground speed was 759 miles an hour when its intended speed was 566. Now, why am I telling you this? I haven't been able to talk about the jet moving across the Pacific Ocean in a while. So that means we're getting into this more routine cadence of weather systems. So back to the temperature story. You know, a lot of people listening right now would probably just like me to tell them what next Friday is going to be, given that it's, of course, a holiday, right? We're going to celebrate Halloween. And I'm telling you, there's a system that's going to go through, and we might be on the back side of it getting some colder air in place. Now, the faster it gets to the east, the better our chances of a recovery after that. And I do think that the eastern third of the country starts off or finishes October and starts November cooler. But the farther west you go, you're going to see a rebound in temperatures. And that's very characteristic of November and October weather. It bounces a lot.
Do these kinds of really fast-moving jet streams carry with them rainfall?
They do, and that is the good news about the new November forecast. Most models have us in what we would call the equal chances. In other words, there's no strong wet, there's no strong dry signal. So we tend to find ourselves in a more routine cadence of weather systems as we go into November. And the fact that the jet is moving is going to send systems through the northwestern United States, and they'll move across the country. My big concern, though, is are we going to get more rain in the south? Now, thankfully, it is raining in Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas and Louisiana and the Delta. And you're going, why? What's thankful about that? Well, if we don't want to deal with drought issues in the in the central U.S. where we are, we certainly don't want to see them developing to our south first. And that's going to be a major concern throughout winter and spring. If we find ourselves by the time we get into March and April without winter or spring moisture reviving the soil and preventing drought in the Delta, then we could be talking about a scenario next year where we might be struggling to get moisture into this area. So I'm watching the rainfall down there, even I think more closely than I'm watching for us over the next 6 months.
Speaking of watching rainfall down there, tell me about Brazil, where I think they probably need a little rain.
They do. They've had, you know, the monsoons coming in fits and starts, and it does that. I imagine when we get the report later today on how much progress they made, they'll still likely be sitting somewhere above the five-year average. But the model still can't decide on what November is going to look like for them. So it's kind of pick your model that supports your market position. What I mean is, if you're short, use the European model. It's dumping rain all throughout the Cerrado, and it's going to make it perfect conditions for germination. If you are long, then you want the GFS to be right. It's bone dry, and you're going, well, how are two models so opposed to one another? Well, they're built by entirely different metrics and mechanisms. They're housed in different parts of the world, and right now they do not agree. But the only thing they agree on is that parts of Argentina will likely slip over dry into November. And that is a key signal to watch because that is linked to the La Nina that's developing. So there will be a weather story coming out of Brazil in the next 2 to 3 months that we will have to spend a lot of time talking about.
Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you more about it later.
That sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media.